Medical Matters.
Dr. Emma Bryant is my guest, gynecologist in private practice. Dr. Bryant, thank you so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Orby, for having me on the show.
Endometriosis. Am I pronouncing it properly? Endometriosis?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, because sometimes I pronounce things really badly, Doc, and I get into so
especially medical terminology, right? Absolutely. I think we all pronounce it badly.
Absolutely. What is it? What is endometriosis?
So endometriosis is quite a common female condition. It is one of the most common sort of non-cancerous conditions in women. And it's a condition whereby the uterine lining or womb lining grows outside of the uterus. So it will then seed on your potentially your pelvic walls, on the intestines, on the bladder, and in some rare cases, on the diaphragm, so where right at the top of your tummy where you breathe. And this ultimately can result in quite severe pain for women. Obviously, as with every disease, there's a spectrum of disease. So there's some sort of statistics that state that, 30% or one in three women will suffer from a form of endometriosis. Now, some women are completely debilitated by this disease, and if left untreated, can result in a long-term life of chronic pain, severe period pains, painful sexual intercourse, bladder dysfunction, bowel dysfunction, mood disorders, and ultimately also it has a link with infertility.
Why does it happen? Dr. Bryant, I mean, I hear a lot about it, especially in my community, and usually they speak about it as fibroids.
So that's a slightly different condition, but maybe it gets mistaken as fibroids. So endometriosis, we don't really understand what happens. We think that there might be a link, a genetic link, so we see it in families. People who start menstruating really early, people who carry a lot of excess weight, those are certain risk factors for endometriosis, but really anybody can get it. One of the mechanisms by which we think you can get endometriosis is a mechanism called retrograde bleeding. So when a woman menstruates monthly, we know that the menstruation will ultimately come out through the vagina. But the fallopian tubes are also attached to that cavity of the womb lining, the little tubes.
Yeah.
And we think that some blood might drop back through those. It's called retrograde bleeding. That's what we call it in medicine. But perhaps that some of that womb lining then goes and seeds in the abdominal cavity. Of course, there are many other theories. One will never be able to pinpoint exactly why somebody gets it. But it's unbelievably common. And one of the biggest issues for me with endometriosis is this notion of period pains are normal. It's normal to experience pain. It's normal to have heavy periods. I also had that when I was young. And our sort of take-home message now during Endometriosis Month, as somebody who treats this disease, we really want to create an awareness about it, because they say it takes up to 10 years to make a diagnosis of endometriosis. And the sort of typical scenario that I'm dealing with is, Mrs. X, she comes to the practice, she's 26 years old, she's really struggling with intercourse, she's had ongoing painful periods, the difficulties with sex have caused her relationships to break down, she's bloated all the time, and, you sort of ask her, how's your menstrual cycle? She's like, well, it's sore, I only take 2 days off work. That is not normal. There's this misnomer to women that it's normal to experience pain. A painful period should not be more than a day. It should go away with a panada. It shouldn't require you to skip work, to drink packets of gen pain or other over-the-counter medicines, to burn yourself with hot water bottles. So I think really with endometriosis, we really want to create an awareness for patients.
There's a strange phenomenon amongst, and more specifically in traditional settings, amongst women sometimes, that it's almost like a rite of passage to be in pain. Like You're not a part of the fraternity of women if you haven't had certain pain. And could that be part of the reason why the pain that should not be normal is so easily normalized and therefore takes such a long time to diagnose?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. That's exactly it. Again, as I was saying, it's, you know, your mum said, look, this is normal. This is just your period. It's the fact that on TV there's an advert advertising period pain medicine. That normalizes period pain, you know.
Yeah.
And really it shouldn't be debilitating. And I think the sadness for me with this condition is that often when we eventually get to the bottom of it, you know, this young woman may or may not have presented to casualty a number of times, gone to a GP for chronic pain, had been sent to see a urologist, been sent to see somebody for her bloating and bowel problems like constipation. And eventually we get to the bottom of it. And simply something simple as starting a birth control or in some instances doing surgery, they come out of that surgery and they say, I can't believe it, doctor, that pain has gone. That pain has gone. You know, I don't experience that pain anymore. I can feel I've just had an operation, but that pain has gone. So it's amazing how women live with this for so long. And one of the difficulties of endometriosis, and when I lecture the medical students and registrars, I always say, have a high index of suspicion of the disease, because as somebody who treats the disease, you know, even fellow gynecologists and colleagues will often say to somebody, well, look, everything looks normal. It's very difficult to diagnose. Because if a woman goes to a gynecologist or is fortunate enough to go to a gynecologist, they might describe, sometimes the sort of symptoms are quite nonspecific, you know, bloating, fatigue, mood changes, painful periods, heavy periods. Sometimes they're not that bad, and you can't, you know, it feels more like they're complaining of getting bladder infections all the time. And the doctor will then do a sonar or an ultrasound, looking at the genital, you know, the female genital organs, and they'll say, well, look, everything actually looks normal. And very often in endometriosis, particularly where people don't treat it a lot, one can't actually diagnose it on scan. You've got to have a high index of suspicion. And
it just makes me wonder, Dr. Bryant, and maybe let me put the question out to our listeners, particularly our women listeners, to what extent have you normalized pain? To what extent has pain been part of what it means to be a woman? I'd be interested to hear from you on 011-883-0702. Yeah. Do you suffer from endometriosis? And could it be that part of the reason why you have not been correctly diagnosed is because you've been fed this constant staple diet of it's okay to be sore? I've got to stand up and say, you know, kudos to women for being women, because you guys just sail through pain. I would be dead. I'd be dead twice over.
There's so many martyrs out there. I often say to patients, I can't believe you functioned for so long. You know, another scenario is if someone will come in and when I examine her tummy or abdomen, I'll see hot water bottle burns on her abdomen. And I'll say, but do you realize you're burning your skin? She's like, oh, no. I mean, I just use that when I've got my period. I'm like, you're causing burn marks, permanent burn marks on your skin from severe pain. But, you know, for you, it's just your period.
So give me a call on 011-883-0702 as I talk to Dr. Emma Bryant about endometriosis. Whether you've dealt with endometriosis and the whole issue of this whole psychological space of the normalization of pain, particularly of that nature, that gynecological type of pains. Please, Dr. Bryant, please give us a call. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. And how do you get through it? Talk to me about the men and how we can be a little more supportive, Dr. Bryant. I wish we could do something that could ease the pain a little bit. What can we do?
So I think that ultimately, you know, when someone is experiencing this level of discomfort, we should always sort of encourage, look, you can use pain medicine and suffer every month. And I think one of the things with endometriosis, there are those women who only suffer during their menstrual cycle. And then there's some women that wear this, you know, because this lining is growing in your tummy cavity, on your intestines and sidewalls of your pelvis, with time it causes inflammation, and that inflammation ultimately leads to adhesions or scar tissue, and that scar tissue often leads to chronic pain. So, I mean, there are varying degrees of disease. But if this was, I mean, my advice to you is, you know, if you have a partner who's suffering, who's constantly complaining of lower back ache, bloating, painful periods, heavy periods, bleeding in between their menstrual cycle, painful intercourse, infertility, one needs to have this index of suspicion and say, look, please go and see somebody. Because sometimes the treatment is really as simple as going on birth control. So simply, you know, a lot of birth control works by stopping womb lining from proliferating, from growing. And it is licensed not only as birth control, but to stop heavy, painful periods. So if we stop the womb lining from growing, we're going to stop that lining all over the tummy from proliferating and growing and bleeding into the tummy and causing the pain. And that ultimately is the simple treatment of endometriosis. So going on an oral contraceptive pill, your standard pills, can treat endometriosis. There is obviously sort of more preferred treatment. There's pills that are more are dedicated to the treatment of endometriosis. But really, I mean, this is where your doctors can guide you.
Yeah.
Pills,
yeah.
Even the simple things like the injection, the implants, Mirena intrauterine devices, these are all tools that can help manage endometriosis.
Let me ask you this question before you continue, Doc.
Yeah, yes.
Part of what we've been raised on as a culture, and I think it's quite ubiquitous. I think it's across all of the different ethnic groups that you would find in South Africa. It's that whole reality of you know, guys, men are not supposed to talk about issues of a gynecological nature, almost, you know.
Yes.
We're not supposed to even look like we want to understand. And I think that might be part of the problem, in that we don't share in the burden. Because I mean, I get sick and you know, I got a little bit of man flu and the whole house knows about it, right? Mom will have some issues of a gynecological nature, and it's hush hush about it, right?
Yeah, you're never going to discuss it.
And we don't talk about
happy.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So I know this is more of a psychological side of the whole thing,
yeah.
But I'm catching on to what you said earlier, that it can take up to 10 years to correctly diagnose endometriosis, precisely because there's this conspiracy of silence around it for whatever reasons that we have it. So I want to really knock hard on that door, because I think that we need to dispel that myth. Otherwise, we will have more and more generations of women, young women, who have to endure unnecessary pain.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that, I mean, that's the whole sort of idea around Endometriosis Month. You know, we're not really focusing on how to treat it, because, you know, there's medicine and there's surgeries, but it's really about creating that awareness and just allowing people to go and actually seek health. I have patients who've gone to male doctors and feel uncomfortable to say to them that they're struggling with their menstrual cycle. I have patients who've gone to GPs who told, oh, but that's normal. It's not normal. And I think that, you know, put aside the pain, long-term effects of endometriosis are debilitating. You know, breakdown in relationships between man and woman, because sexual dysfunction associated with it. Infertility. I mean, women by nature now are delaying fertility.
Yeah.
So we're only having our babies in our 30s because we're studying and trying to get ahead in life. And in that time, if this endometriosis is left untreated, it leads to more scarring and more damage and ultimately infertility. I mean, that's another issue that we don't discuss openly, is infertility. So, I mean, we've got a long way to go where it comes to women's health and sort of breaking this barrier between the private nature of it and actually having an understanding about it, you know.
Let's get some calls. 011-883-0702. We're talking about endometriosis. March is Endometriosis Awareness Month. What experiences have you had with endometriosis, both men and women? Right. So the women might be the carriers of the physical burden, but perhaps we as a society need to start acknowledging the fact that this is not their problem, but our problem. Maybe that's part of what needs to happen for us to really break the hold of the pain that's been endured by women for generations, because we just want to be silent about this. So give us a call. I'd love to hear from you. Celeste is in Randburg. Good evening to you, Celeste.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead, Celeste.
Hi. So I experienced this. I'm now 62.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had all of the symptoms like the doctors has said. It was very deliberate, you know, debilitating, because, you know, your social calendar hinged off, you know, how you were experiencing your symptoms for the month. I mean, just to put an example in terms of the pain, come February and it's hellish hot, I would actually sit on our underfloor heating just to try and curb the pain or just to try and ease the pain. And it's this continuous, dull pain that meds don't even really actually help.
Let me ask you this question. What role could your partner or your children or your family have played to have eased the pain at that moment?
Well, my husband was an actual saint. I mean, he never complained. I mean, if we were supposed to be going out and I just didn't feel up to it, he was okay with it. You know, he didn't mind at all.
Yeah.
You know, he really understood. I mean, and like the doctor said, eventually, I mean, you know, the medicines that I was taking, the painkillers that I was taking, were prescribed. I think they were Schedule 5. And, you know, all the toiletries that you end up buying on a monthly basis, I mean, for me, it was just, you know, it was really expensive. So eventually, I mean, I did have to have fertility treatment. I knew that already from a young age, but, you know, eventually I just decided that it was just more worth my while to have a partial hysterectomy, because the money that, like I say, the money I was spending on all these toiletries and medication, it just wasn't worth it anymore. And my advice to any other person that's experiencing the same thing, you know, yes, have your children as quickly as you can, and then have a partial hysterectomy. I don't regret any of that at all. But, I mean, going through that whole stage, I mean, you go out and then, you know, you're so worried that you're going to mess yourself or wake, you know, get up from a chair and then you've got this red stain on your dress. It was constantly like that for me. My cycles ran for 6 weeks at a time, you know, so you're constantly tired.
Yeah.
I think that did affect our sex life as well.
Yeah.
And my husband never really complained. He was a true, you know, hero with that kind of thing. So,
Celeste, thank you so much for your call and thank you very much for your candor. I really, really appreciate it. Emma?
Yes.
I mean, what do you make of that call?
I think, I mean, it just sort of depicts a story, like an ongoing problem of this chronic pain that people have, or that Celeste has had to accept and get on with, you know. And I think ultimately it resulted in hysterectomy, which is one of the common managements for endometriosis, is his hysterectomy, so removal of the uterus and then cutting out what we call excision of the endometriosis growing around the womb. The only thing that I just wanted to correct with Celeste is that we don't perform partial hysterectomy anymore. That's where you leave some of the womb behind. We actually remove it because a lot of that endometriosis grows behind that little back part of the vagina and the womb and between the rectum. So we actually opt, obviously, if someone's completed their family, if we're not managing them with
hormonal medicine or your sort of birth control type medicines, then we often opt for hysterectomy as well as excision of endometriosis. And this obviously needs to be done with someone with expertise in endometriosis.
Let's speak to B in Cape Town. Hi, B.
Hi, yes. I used to have mind-blowing pains until I found this big pink painkiller. However, it all went away after I'd had my baby that was a Caesar. Now, what I want to know is if a woman has, like, liver coming out, is that endometriosis? And also, I had a cyst on my ovary, which was taken away with hormone pills, but my cousin had a cyst as big as the baby when she gave birth. And I want to know if
endometriosis, yeah.
Yes, I want to know if it causes cysts, yeah. And also, like, liver coming out, like pieces of raw liver coming out.
Sure. Dr. Bryant?
Yes, I think that she's sort of making analogy to liver coming out is big, hard clots of blood that can be mistaken or presumably looks like meaty, like flesh.
Yeah.
And that's often just a quantification of heavy menstrual bleeding. So there's endometriosis, one of the symptoms can be heavy menstrual bleeding. It doesn't necessarily mean you have endometriosis. There are many causes for heavy menstrual bleeding. Period pains, there are other causes for period pains. But period pains that persist and go on and are unusually prolonged is often indicative of endometriosis. I think what we're trying to say is, you know, if your period pains last longer than a day, if you're missing school, if your periods are heavy, go and get checked out, because there's a possibility that it might be endometriosis. In terms of cysts, a person with endometriosis can develop cysts of the ovaries that we call them chocolate cysts. It's where the endometriosis has seeded on the ovary and you get these horrendous big cysts that are linked with infertility, scarring, and these need to often be managed surgically. But all women can potentially get any type of cyst. So your little ovary is this active thing that's making an egg every single month. And we get many type of what we call physiological cysts. Now, a physiological cyst is perhaps a normal phenomenon where a cyst will form of the ovary. And very often, they can cause pain for 2 or 3 days, but they tend to go away. And the key to this, very, very seldomly, cysts will sort of persist and might need sort of a surgical intervention. But 97% of the time, they go away by themselves. And I think the difference between somebody prone to a few cysts now and then and endometriosis is that endometriosis, it's going to get you every month. It's either going to be severe during your period or it's going to start persisting going on and on.
Yeah.
I want to also just mention that you get endometriosis of the actual uterine wall, of the muscle of the endometriosis of the uterus, and that's called adenomyosis. And that also is associated with chronic pelvic pain, heavy menstrual bleeding, this liver-like clots that she's talking about. And that's one of the common reasons, and it usually occurs after women have had babies in their sort of 30s and 40s. That's one of the commonest reasons for heavy periods. And often, again, we'll manage it with hormonal medicine ultimately end up in hysterectomy where indicated if medical management hasn't worked. But cysts, not necessarily linked just with endometriosis, they can happen to absolutely anybody.
I also wanted to say one last thing. Yep.
And that is that endometriosis can be asymptomatic. So it's one of those really crazy diseases where some women just present with infertility. And when they go to a fertility clinic and people are working them up, they say, well, look, you actually happen to have endometriosis. Your tubes are scarred. You can see the ovaries stuck here and there. So it's an unusual disease in the sense that the amount of disease that you have does not quantify the amount of pain that you have.
All right. So here's a couple of questions from our 702 WhatsApp line. This person says, hi, Aubrey, please ask if a person menstruates twice a month, what could be the cause of this? Full cycle twice in a month, says Bongi.
Yo, Bongi, this is a difficult one to uncover in one response because that list is,
you know, I've been on the show before. I've spoken about irregular uterine bleeding, and the list is endless. So the cause of that could be a cervical cancer. It can be a pre-cancer of your cervix. It can be caused by your hormone therapy. It can be caused by endometriosis. It can be caused by the pill. It can be caused by an infection. Mm. I mean, the list is absolutely endless. I think that, you know, it's not normal to have irregular periods. So if you menstruate in 2 full periods, you know, more than in twice a month, so within a 24-day cycle, then you probably need to go and get that addressed or seen to by a gynecologist. Yeah. Just go for a routine pap smear, go and have a sonar, and just make sure everything's in check.
Aubrey and the doctor, hi. I would like to know what is the procedure for endometrial ligation or ligation from start to end. I have chronic anemia, and me and the doctor at military sick bay agreed on the procedure. But now a gynecologist from military hospital will have to see it through. I'm so confused, though, because so far I'm waiting for pap smear results and was given antibiotics by the doctor, but was not so good in explaining the procedure. I had a normal CT scan, abdominal and pelvic, in December, and that's from Jay.
Okay. So I think what the patient is alluding to is actually something called endometrial ablation. Now, endometrial ablation is not used for the treatment of endometriosis. It's a means to treat heavy menstrual bleeding. So some women, particularly later in life when you've had your kids, due to very, you know, various conditions, you know, your ovaries are changing, your hormones are changing, your premenopausal, the whole pathway between the womb lining and the egg is changing, and or other conditions like adenomyosis can lead to heavy menstrual bleeding, and in rare conditions, bleeding disorders, which ultimately can result in anemia. So women just continuously feeling weak and fatigued. One of the mechanisms to treat this is medical management. So we could use something like an intrauterine device, a Mirena, which will stop the womb lining from forming and in 6 out of 10 women cause amenorrhea or treat the problem. In some instances, people opt for a non-hormonal method that's permanent called an endometrial ablation. Mm. Now, this is done under anesthetic. It's a day procedure, meaning you don't sleep over at the hospital, but you go under anesthetic. And a device or little camera is passed up into your uterus. We check the cavity. We make sure there are no growths or anything that can be contributing to the bleeding. And then we actually burn the womb lining. And there are various ways of doing it. You can use a laser. You can use hot water in a balloon. There's microwave ablation. It depends what your practitioner is familiar with using. And the womb lining is then charred. It burns. It scars. And then in theory, your menstruation should stop or diminish, you know, come to be, you should have a nice low flow. So it is a tool to managing heavy menstrual bleeding.
This one says, hi, Aubrey, happy to have you back in good health. Thank you for a compelling topic. I lost my friend at the age of 36 because of this condition and was not correctly diagnosed. She then developed ovarian cancer, and they could not remove the cancer because the endometriosis had grown all over her organs. Where the cancer was located, and that is from Compassion. So this can be a facilitator of cancer, endometriosis, Dr. Bright?
Yes, Aubrey, absolutely. So it's very rare and unlikely that it will cause cancer. So it's not to say, it's not like when I've had discussions with you on the HPV germ being linked with cervical cancer, but it is one of the risk factors. So in certain types of endometrial cancer, one of them of ovarian cancer, one of them being something called a clear cell carcinoma and the other one being an endometroid adenocarcinoma of the ovary. So it does have a link, probably by means of the chronic inflammation of this condition, you know, with time causing endometriosis, causing ovarian cancer. But it's not to say that one would go and remove the ovaries of all women with endometriosis because that link isn't strong enough.
Hmm.
Does that make sort of sense?
Yeah,
so yes,
yeah.
It has a propensity to be linked with ovarian cancer, but that link isn't strong enough for us to now suddenly
go and say, look, all women with endometriosis, you need to be aware you might get ovarian cancer. Mm. I do, however, recommend that when I see my patients with endometriosis and I make a diagnosis and I start that treatment journey with them, to say, look, this is a lifelong disease, and you are somebody, when you go through the change of life, it will get a lot better because now you don't have hormones in your body, so you've gone through menopause, endometriosis generally dies down, but you are somebody who would probably benefit from ongoing gynecological evaluation because you have a slightly increased risk compared to the normal population of in fact developing something like ovarian cancer one day.
Doc, I want to go back to something we started off in the beginning of our conversation where you said to me that fibroids and endometriosis are not necessarily the same thing. Please explain.
Okay, so they're two different diseases, well, not diseases, pathologies. Let's call them pathologies.
Yeah.
So a fibroid is a non-cancerous growth that is commonly seen in the uterus. And again, it tends to affect us in the third and fourth decade of life, although, of course, you see them in younger women as well, in your 20s and that sort of thing. Fibroids might be completely coincidental. So patient comes for a routine visit. I see a 3-centimeter fibroid. She has no worries in the world. She's got no problems with the menstrual cycle. She's had 4 children. Everything's fine. Fibroids being as common as they are, they say, again, up to 30% of women will have fibroids, and they're much more common in the African communities, so it's not uncommon to find them. We only treat fibroids if they are causing symptoms. So what kind of symptoms can fibroids cause? Well, they can cause heavy periods or heavy menstrual bleeding that can result in anemia and iron deficiency and the need for blood transfusion. And in this case of the patient who phoned in earlier, she said, I was sent for a CT scan. I suppose, look, you can actually diagnose them just on a standard ultrasound, but I suppose they were trying to exclude things like fibroids. So they can cause heavy periods. If that's the case, then we will opt to treat them either surgically or medically, hormone therapy or cutting them out. They may lead to infertility if they're very big and they have altered the shape of the womb, or they're lying in the cavity of the womb and that little sperm and egg can't plant where it needs to plant to make the baby. And they can also cause pressure effect. So pressure effect means that they grow so big. I mean, towards the end of last year, removed fibroids that were weighing 3 and 4 kilograms. So again, there's a spectrum to this disease. Lots of women will have these growths and be asymptomatic, and some women will have deep pressure symptoms, problems of constipation because these growths have got so big they're pushing on the intestines or on the rectum at the back, problems of needing to urinate frequently, waking up in the middle of the night to urinate because these fibers is almost like that of a pregnant woman that's pushing on everything. So common problem. Sometimes it can cause a problem, sometimes it doesn't. I think ultimately we treat the symptoms. The younger the patient is that gets fibroids, the more sort of concerned I am that these things will grow and start wreaking havoc. But if someone comes to me in their 40s and you happen across a fibroid, I would probably ignore it if she had no symptoms and say, look, let's just keep an eye on it. Does that sort of answer
everything? Yeah, it does. What is the youngest age that we could encounter endometriosis in a young female?
That's a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant question. So, usually it's women in their 20s to 40s, right? That's where you usually see it. But I operated on somebody the other day who's 17 years old with severe, what we call stage 4 endometriosis. We even had to cut a little segment out of her rectum for endometriosis. So this disease can affect anybody at any age. And again, that brings me back to that beginning statement. Bad period pain is not normal. So whether your daughter's 14 or 40, bad period pain is not normal. They need to have some sort of evaluation. And I'm glad that I got to this young girl came to me, her sister's known with endometriosis, her mom had fertility issues, and the mom came because she had a high index of suspicion. and ultimately we've resulted in an excellent surgery. We've cut everything out. She's pain-free, and she's now on medicine to hopefully try and limit the debilitating effects of untreated endometriosis.
I suppose for me, the big takeaway from this conversation, Doc, is the fact that we need to be a little more sensitive about the idea that it is womanly to have pain, you know? We need to be a little more careful about that notion, because it is what exacerbates, it is what may facilitate even things as dangerous as cancer because of untreated, undiagnosed endometriosis. That for me is the big takeaway, particularly as a guy, because I think that we are raised on the staple diet of you shouldn't even be asking questions and talking about issues, you know, women's issues. But we should be. I'm getting from this particular conversation, we should be talking about it. We should be normalizing the conversation so that we don't have to bear the burden of pain for such a long time.
Absolutely. And I agree with you and where the emphasis is on pain. But I also just want to bring it to your attention that sometimes this pain does not necessarily, it's not as simple as saying, I've got a painful menstruation. That's a lot easier to, you know, sort of speak about. Sometimes these patients have what we call non-specific pain, bloating, fatigue, lower back pain. And do you know the number of times I've treated somebody on or operated on somebody, confirmed the endometriosis for surgery, cut it off, and I come out of there and they say, so I'm not mad. I say, yes, you've got endometriosis. I'm not mad, doctor. I thought I was going mad. Nobody believed me. They kept thinking I was complaining all the time. I don't think anybody's going to go to the effort to complain of bloating and discomfort and bladder infection if there isn't something there. And I mean, I think that, you know, we need to listen to one another and encourage people, you know, to go and get help if they're feeling ongoing discomfort.
Well, Dr. Brian, thank you so much for joining us this evening. A lot for us to learn this evening, and I really appreciate your time. How do people get in touch with you if they want to consult, if they want to come and have a conversation with you?
Okay. You can find me at Life Cliff Hospital in Pretoria, and you can go to our website, www.dremmabryant.co.za. Everything you need will be on there, and you're welcome to send us an email.
Dr. Emma Bryant, thank you so much for joining us, gynecologist in private practice.